Hey guys, it's Mean Green Nation podcast episode 39, coming to you delayed from San Antonio and Irving, Texas. That's where we're recording these things. With me, as always, is a good friend, fellow Mean Green Nationer, Mr. Greg Godecker. How you doing, Mr. Greg Godecker? I'm doing good. I'm drinking coffee from my Mean Green Nation mug, writing with my Mean Green Nation pen. I'm feeling good.
Best times of the year. Of course, that doesn't mean much to us, but I mean,
I know that's the thing is that I've kind of watching any of the college basketball games that I've been on kind of hurts my soul a little bit. You know, I get a little twinge of pain. You know, because it reminds me of this terrible season that we had, and you know. I think we all could, you know, we're not part of the athletic department or the sports information department. We don't get paid by the school or anything like that. So we can speak with some objectivity here, and we can say this was very disappointing. It was a very disappointing season. I was unhappy with it.
Yeah, it was a disappointing end to the season. You lose the last four games of the year, and the way that you lost in the conference tournament to Rice, I mean, that's just embarrassing. 82-54 to a team that you beat twice. I mean, that's Rice.
Yeah, I know. I think some people were describing it as it's kind of a listless performance. I don't know. I mean, it was kind of the kind of game that we've seen from a Tony Benford coach team. You know, I mean, I didn't really have high hopes for the season. I think you may have. I was thinking that we're not going to get to 16 wins, and we didn't, you know. And, I think this season went about as what I figured it was going to be. We were going to struggle because we didn't have a point guard. We didn't have a point guard because the guy that we thought was going to play point guard was real ineligible, and we didn't have a backup plan. And I think that's all those things, not having a backup plan, not having – you want at least two guys that can play these positions, you know what I mean, and not T.J. Taylor filling in as point guard when he's really a two guard.
I think the backup plan was Eaglin and Greg White Pittman, but they really couldn't handle any type of pressure at all. So Eaglin had some moments during the year, but still he wasn't, you know, he wasn't able to make that step up from the lower level college game to Division I, you know.
And then, you know, there you go. We had the same, I guess, discussion about the quarterback position when we're talking about this, that part of coaching is projecting talent from one level to another. High school talent to the college game, JUCO talent to the college game, et cetera, et cetera. And we got on Mike Canales and Dan McCarney for really, you know, messing things up with Josh Greer there. And I think we kind of say the same thing with, you know, with Eaglin. If we can't get a point guard that can play at this level and you know, and can't handle Conference USA full court pressure, then what? You know what I mean? I mean, you know, he was one of better, but yeah,
right. Well, he was one of the really good assist guys for the team that he used to play for. So, makes you wonder if he had good shooters around him, or because he really didn't have any explosiveness, you know, to drive past people. So it wasn't like he was breaking down defenders and getting in the paint and then dishing. He was just kind of sitting at the top of the key, just throwing it around. So,
yeah.
I mean, we didn't really have anybody with any explosiveness beyond DeAndre Harris. That was about it.
Yeah, you know, and then I think everybody looked at basically the one that got away was Chris Jones. You know, led Angelo State to the conference final there. You know, I think we had some problems with him. I don't know the whole story, but I know that the coach, Tony Benford, had problems with him. And so that led to him transferring. I really would have liked to see him finish out his career here with Jordan Williams. You know, because, I don't know, we were so hyped about them, and we ended up only getting one. So, speaking of Jordan Williams, sad to see him go. He was part of a rough time in North Texas basketball, but he was a very good player, and that's evidenced by his rankings all across the media guide, basically, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of sad to watch him struggle the last four games. I mean, he really struggled against Rice, and
yeah,
that was surprising. He only had 8 points, and He didn't score over double digits in the last four games, and that hurt us.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is that he's your best player, and your best player can't do heroic things and carry you, then, you know, if you don't have a good team usually, then that kills you. You're just, you live and die off one guy.
Yeah, and this was one of the things that I thought we had talent. I still think we do have talent, but, I mean, if you look at, like, the mid-major teams that are always really good, it's always those teams that they've got four seniors or four juniors, or, you know, it's a bunch of guys that have played together for a long time.
Yeah.
And we didn't have that. And it's hard, you know, when you don't have that, you got to have like Kentucky type talent that you can just throw people in and you can just go win games. And, you know, we had talent, but we just didn't have talent that worked well together.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like beating a dead horse and whatever, that's on a staff. You want a staff to get talent that meshes well together. And so maybe it's not the greatest talent, you know. Maybe it isn't, you know, like you say, Kentucky type dudes that are, you know, going to go on to NBA careers and win Halls of Fame awards. It's going to be guys that can play good basketball together. You know, that's the thing. And I don't really see us doing that. And that's been like a long term complaint I've had about this regime here. I said we just kind of get guys and. On the surface, they seem like they work out. It's like, well, he's lengthy, and, you know, he could play here, but they don't necessarily mesh with the guys that we have there. You know, I don't know. I think, like I said, yeah. It's kind of...
It's just a revolving door of players coming in and players going. Because, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people are wondering, okay, well, who's going to be the guy that leaves out of the program this year? I mean, yeah. What happens if we lose DeAndre Harris? Because he's been the quote-unquote guy that had the issues on the sideline this year. I mean, if we lose him next year, then... Oh, who's going to be a scorer? I love Jeremy Combs, but he's not a guy that really shoots the ball outside, you know, 15 foot. You know, what do we do?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that North Texas under Johnny Jones for a while always had one or two guys that could hit the three. You know, we always had one or two guys that could always shoot. We had shooters, we had guys that could handle the ball, and we're trying to fill in, like, size or this kind of other thing, or, like, you know, tenacity. There are other kind of things. And then, I don't know, Tony Benford got here, and then we had that season where no one could shoot a three. Like, we had no outside shooting. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, what happened to the team? This is a thing that we always need. You always need shooters. In basketball, you know, especially in college game, you need guys that could shoot. Where are those guys? And then, you know, now this year it was like, well, we don't really have a point guard, or, you know, like the point guard that would handle pressure. It seems like we're always missing, you know, a vital thing. And, you know, like you're saying, say we lose DeAndre Harris, then we're going to need a score. And those, you know what I mean? It's like, what is that? What is that? We don't have, like, any long-term plan. We're just filling in things as we go.
Yeah, they obviously need somebody that can score from the perimeter next year. They need Jamichael Reese to be eligible to play point guard. Yeah. And then, I mean, we have the big 7-foot center that's playing in high school right now that – you don't know how well he'll be able to pick up the college game. You know, some people say he can be all-conference USA, and some people are like, well, it's going to take time for him to adjust because he's not really – he's not playing a high level of competition every, you know, week. So I know, but he is 7 foot. So he's 7 foot. He's got some skills. You combine him with Jeremy Combs down low, and you got quite a – you know, you got a nice little post game, especially if Ahmed – you know, he struggled at times with certain things, but he's shown the ability that he can kind of score. So if he gets more adjusted to the college game, then you got Ahmed and Combs and Bryce, and, you know, maybe you got some working down in the post. But we probably still need to add another post guy. So since we're losing Voss and we're losing Armani Flanagan, so we're definitely going to need to add some explosive guys down low.
Yeah. You always have a hunt for size in basketball, even if they're not so good. Anyway, so it has been a depressing end to the basketball season. Do you see Tony Benford coming back? I know there were some rumblings that he was not going to come back because we were finally getting serious about these kinds of things. I think most signs point to no.
You think he's coming back?
Yeah, I think he's coming back.
Yeah, I think if he was going to be gone, it would have been like Peterson. It would have been like pretty much right away. Hey, we're moving on. You know, I thought that there was that understanding, like, he had to be above 500, you know, before the season. And if he didn't reach that, that he was going to be gone. But I guess, you know, hey, you win five games towards the end of the season and everybody thinks, you know, maybe he went to Rick and he pleaded with him and said, look, man, I've got talent. I can do this. Just let me, one more year. We got this great 7-foot kid coming in and, you know. And Rick was probably like, hey, okay, I'm fine, so whatever.
Well, I mean, the other thing is that, like, he may not win over the fans, but he's won everybody else over. I mean, everybody, even, you know, Giorgio in his little retirement game, he was talking about how he loved Tony Benford. He's a great guy, great to work with, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that goes a long way. You know, there's a guy that he's not an asshole, so it's hard to get rid of him, you know?
Right.
Except for the, you know, the major reasons that we have here. Hey, winning basketball games. He doesn't do that so well, but, you know, he's a great guy.
I think that the only guy that we have in our corner that, you know, would maybe like to see a change is probably the president of the university. Because he came from UNLV. He saw, you know, what a good basketball program can do. And, I mean, if you're going to be a successful mid-major team in Conference USA and we want to grow, then basketball is a huge thing that we've got to have. You know, we were good for so many years under Johnny Jones. You know, he's seen good basketball sellouts at UNLV. So I get the feeling that he goes to the basketball game. So I get the feeling that, you know, he wants to see us succeed there. Yeah. Better basketball, a better product overall, better game day atmosphere. You know, and like he, you know, I think the North Texas paper, they had the interview with him where, you know, he just said winning will bring in the fans, you know, more than, you know, lights and the super pit or whatever they want to add to it, you know. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the athletic director feels a little bit of pressure. But, yeah, I get the sense that we're probably going to be stuck with Benford for another year. And, I mean, I don't agree with it, but – and I don't think many fans do agree with it, you know, so.
You know, I've always been frustrated ever since I was an undergrad. The fact that we don't really turn out and support the basketball team. But, you know, I realize that there needs to be investment in the team and it's everything. And so maybe having a better arena would get better recruits in there, and which leads to better basketball. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of indirect investment. I'd like to see, you know, better coaching, like, you know, like a no tolerance for crappy coaching kind of thing. Like, you know, spend the money to get a good coach in here, turn the program around. Because I feel like the return on investment in basketball is greater than it is with football. Football is super expensive, you know. There's a lot of money that you need to spend to get a good program. And, you know, it can be an arms race. You got to have the facilities, you know, the facilities for the players, for the coaches, for the staff, for the fans, you know, the badass stadium, et cetera, et cetera. Basketball, you know, it's 15 dudes, and really just about five dudes that are pretty good that you need, you know? Five guys.
Right.
And they don't need, you know, like a 50,000 square foot, you know, facility to go work out in. They need, you know, they need a nice one, but it's smaller, and they can go use a football one, too. And that brings in a lot of money. Say this team, you know, got top 25, went to the tournament. That's a crap ton of money that comes in. Recognition.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Look at SMU over there. Everybody loves them now just because they got a good basketball coach, a good basketball team.
It's the recognition thing for me that stands out, because you don't have to spend a lot of money and you can have a good team, you can have a good coach. And we can go make a run in the NCAA tournament. You know, you can be a Cinderella, you know, one year and you make a run, and then everybody recognizes the name North Texas. Yeah. You know, it's not that hard to get to that level, whereas our football team, it's going to be harder to make a run to get to a college football playoff.
Mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, every year in basketball that North Texas football has next to zero chance of winning a national title in football. They can do great things, go to a bowl game, all this, and everything will be great. But they won't win a national title. It would be extremely hard. They would have to win every game by, like, 55 and play, you know, one or two, top 25 teams and beat them by 55. And then maybe somebody will give them, like, a top 10 ranking. Basketball, you just win every game that you they put in front of you, you win a national title. You know, you win all the games, you go win the national title.
You look at it, you look at teams like Kentucky, you know, the bigger teams that have a lot of one-and-done players. If we were to assemble a team that had five guys that had played together, you know, for 4 years, understood the game, they were good at it, they could go beat a lot of these one-and-done players, you know, because they would have been in the stage before. They understand the game a little bit better. So it's not that hard to see or hard to imagine North Texas making a run to a Sweet 16 one year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so that's my dream. That's my hope, that we take basketball a little bit more seriously. I realize we're in Texas, and that's, not necessarily realistic. Not necessarily a realistic kind of dream. But what are you going to do? Hey, let's talk a little bit. Let's get away from the depressing basketball and talk a little bit about football and all the recruits that came in. We were supposed to do this last month, but then we ran into scheduling difficulties. And I'll go ahead and take the blame for that, ladies and gentlemen. But now we're here, and we can talk a little bit about it. So signing day. And thereafter, I mean, we're getting ready to do this. The spring depth chart came out. I mean, they're starting fall spring practice. You got some thoughts, man?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we do with our baseball team of quarterbacks, the nine guys. You know, I introduced a little mean green quarterback tracker this week to, you know, track the progress through spring ball and the fall ball and see who has that starter. You know, obviously McNulty is listed as our starter right now, and it's going to be – I don't think it'll be tough for somebody to supplant him. You know, if somebody comes in and is very successful during the spring, it's not that hard to imagine. I mean, hey, your guy, Dejon Williams, I've seen him in some highlight videos. I think he was on one of the teams that won their little – spring workout challenge things or whatever. I don't know. It looked like he was participating and he was, you know, out there working hard. So maybe he's matured a little bit.
Yeah, which is good. I'm on team Dejon. I want to see him go out there and throw five touchdown passes a game and open up the season. It's not that I dislike McNulty, but he just doesn't excite me, man. You know what I mean? And you know, whatever. I can have favorites. I'm not the coach.
No, I'm the one kid this week that, you know, some people were like on was Quinn Chabanar. And then, you know, they had the I don't know if you saw it, but then some people were talking him up on Go Mean Green's website. And then Brett Vito came out with his article to kind of slam down that idea. There's no way that Chabanar could come in, light the world on fire, and become the starter. I'm like, dude, he doesn't have to light the world on fire to be North Texas's quarterback starter. So it's not that hard to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Somebody needs to remind Brett Vito of the stats of the first game against Texas. What did we complete, like 13 yards total passing? Is that what it was? Like, a guy can throw a 15-yard out. Then there you go. He beats that stat line for the whole team. People like Caleb Chumley, but I think he's been played tight end. Everybody thinks he's played tight end. DeMarcus Smith, he was going to be in the running, but then he's not in spring ball because he can't make the grade, and so he's probably going to be really far behind in the fall. And so, therefore, he's going to get knocked down the depth chart a little bit.
But again, how far behind is he going to be from our guys?
That's true.
Again, he doesn't have to come in and light the world on fire. He just has to prove that he's better than Andrew McNulty. Again, just if you just say that, you think, that's not that hard to do. So,
it's not a knock on the guy, but yeah, he's gotten beat out at every spring practice, spring and fall practice, his entire career, right? I mean, somebody's beat him out, whether it was Derek Thompson or Josh Greer came in and beat him. So it's not unreasonable to think that somebody else could come in and do it again.
Right. So,
yeah. Yeah, you're right. I agree.
So the quarterback is probably everybody's, you know, everybody that goes attends the spring practices, which are open to the public. They're, you know, obviously all their focus is going to be on the quarterback position, but there's some other positions that, you know, are worth taking a look at. Offensive line, we're trying to replace a lot of people there. There's a lot of moving parts, so that's one area to watch. The linebacker position, you know, we lost to Kune. We're moving, what's his name? Jamal Marshall's kind of stepped out of that role. He's a cornerback now.
Yeah, so I think weird, man.
But yeah, so linebacker is going to be interesting to watch. Trying to think one of the other ones. You know, the wide receiver, that's probably one area, the other out of my top three, the wide receiver would be up there too, because I know we have Carlos Harris, but I got to see some other guys develop. We got to see Darvin Kinsey try and catch the ball. You want to see, where's T. Goree? You know, you want to see how good is Rutherford progress, you know? So it'll be interesting to watch that group too.
Yeah, I mean, the Jamal Marshall thing is interesting to me. I mean, I like it because we, well, under previous defensive coach, we like to do a lot of press coverage. We tried to, but then we started playing back. But when we play forward, you know, like do press coverage, we'd get beat really easily. So can he run with these guys? I don't know. Obviously, he played linebacker, and you've seen him play a little bit. He can make some tackles, so, you know, tackling from the cornerback position is huge, and, you know, I'm big on this, and that's why I liked Kenny Byers a lot. Kenny Byers is great making tackles. He wasn't so great getting, you know, covering the deep ball. So I think that Jamal Marshall kind of be in that same mold, be able to step up, make a tackle, maybe even make some plays out there. Like, you know, he had a almost linebacker body, so he could step up, make some big hits, force some fumbles, that kind of thing. But, you know, can he run? Can he run with these guys and not get beat over the top?
You got to remember, he was a track star coming out of high school. And I'm trying to think of the one game. He ran somebody down, and it didn't even look like he was trying. So I have a feeling like he can run, and I'm pretty sure he's faster than Byers, too. So,
well, I mean, that's always the thing, is that straight-ahead speed, there's a bunch of dudes that are track stars but are not necessarily football running. Now, I'm not saying that he's slow, whatever. I'm just saying, can he run with these guys that are running their routes, you know, the double moves and stuff? You know, I don't know. That's the question. I think he'll be fine. I mean, they stuck him out there, and they think he could play it. So, you know, they obviously think that it's a possibility. We want to see what's going to happen out there.
Yeah, it's intriguing because a lot of people want to have those bigger corners now. And so maybe it's a sign that we're going to do more press coverage under the new defensive coordinator. You know, I know a lot of people would enjoy that, but still.
Have one of those Alabama-style corners out there, those dudes that are like 6'3", 6'4". Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it could be a money. Let's say he turns out, you know, he balls out at corner. He could be a guy that gets drafted next year.
Yeah.
Who knows? So.
We got the transfer. He came in and he's going to be at middle linebacker. They moved Fred Scott over. Do you have any big thoughts on that? I don't really. It doesn't really mean anything to me. I think we'll be fine out there. We're usually pretty decent at linebacker. So, and we've had some guys move from position to position and without a problem. I think we'll be fine again.
It'll be, Fred Scott will be taken kind of. I know they had listed it on their little picture that he was playing the Will linebacker, but he's taking Akune's old position. Yeah. They're moving him there. The middle linebacker, Blake Bean and Anthony Wallace, that'll be interesting to watch because we struggled last year at middle linebacker. Where we struggled was covering out of the backfield. You know, Fred Scott really struggled with that.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. The Calvin Miner, Seth Ellis battle, the other outside linebacker. Both those guys are really athletic, so it'll be fun to watch there. Blake Bean, you know, he played under our defensive coordinator for Buffalo before he transferred. So, you know, maybe he'll be able to get people lined up, you know, easier. Maybe that's why he's listed as the starter, you know, to kind of help transition during the spring ball. He knows exactly what the defensive coordinator is looking for, where people need to be, and so that's probably why he's listed there.
Yeah, that's that makes sense. I mean, that's half the battle. Anybody else on that list? That the safety, who is it starting? John Scalecki?
Shalashi? Yeah. Shalashi? Well, that's
whatever. I don't know his name.
He's fast, but I don't think he'll be the starter. He's a good backup player, but I can't see any way him being the starter in the fall. I think James Gray is a guy. He was a big-time JUCO recruit that we picked up. I think he's a guy that might slide into that position. Ja'Kyle Moore, that's the guy that transferred in from UAB. He didn't play at UAB. he's a guy that could probably make an impact too. He probably just needs to learn, get comfortable with where he's playing. Keyshawn McClain, we saw everything that he was capable of last year. I think that he's going to really be a stud in our secondary for us. So it's really the battle for that other safety spot that'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's interesting, that one there. Again, so what I'm looking for from these guys is they don't need to be the 2013 North Texas defense. They're running around making plays, forcing fumbles, getting interceptions, leading the team. They just need to not get beat over the top on the deep post throughout that. Like, we got scored on, like, what was it, seven times this year? Or seven, at least seven times to get scored on, and once or twice just for nice 50-yard gains, you know? I mean, it was a bad habit we had getting beat like that in 2012, 2013. It was like the beginning of it. It was still, you know, happening, and then we shut it down and like didn't give up any plays until we played UTSA, and then it came back up again. They were throwing it deep to the tight end down the middle, but we even got an interception on that. And then this year, everybody remembers, like, UAB hit it on us. Who else? The other team, was it Indiana, hit that on us a couple times, and then pretty much every team after that.
It was play action and go downtown.
Yeah,
and we struggled to cover downtown passes. So it'll be interesting to watch the secondary, their growth. There's no Zach Whitfield there. We're expecting big things from Chad Davis. He's getting in his junior year. He was a good recruit, so he's got to turn out this year. It'd be interesting to watch that. Then you have the defensive line, you know, who kind of struggled last year.
Yeah.
But Tillman Johnson, I know a lot of people are high on him because he played well at times. Jerrion Roberts, he's played well at times too. Chad Polk, we all, you know, he's not a big guy, but he gives you a ton of effort. And then the defensive tackle would be the battle. You know, Austin Orr is going to be one guy. He'll obviously be a starter. But then the battle for the other spot was Sir Calvin Wallace, Sid Moore, and then the big guy, TJ Taula. Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that, you know, what's his name, TJ, can develop into something nice. I'm hoping for big things from him this year.
Is there anybody else that, no, none of the freshman guys are going to be. I'm looking at the recruits, because I know we didn't really talk about those guys in depth. Is there anybody there that you think is going to do big things aside from, you know, the people that we've named already?
I like the one defensive tackle from Oklahoma, the DeMichael Harrison, the guy that he committed to UTEP and he flipped to us. He hasn't been playing football for that long, but his size already, the 6'3", 285 coming out of high school. And just watching, you know, some of his highlights, you can see the explosibility, the good footwork from him. So I think by the time that he's done playing at UNT, that he might be an all-conference player.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of JUCO guys there. We talked about that before, a little bit more in depth. Thaddeus Thompson, James Gray, we already mentioned him, Creighton Barr.
The Creighton Barr, I think he's already on the two deep.
Yeah.
Well, it was not. He was the backup center. So, yeah. Obviously, the coaches have high expectations for him to come in and, you know, at least push Caden and Kirby or, you know, find somewhere else on the offensive line to play.
Yeah. I don't see Grindle on the two deep. I wonder what's up with him. Anyway. Yeah, so, like, that's the thing. It's spring ball. There's a lot of time. There's a whole summer and there's fall camp. There's a lot of time for all this to change, and I expect it to change greatly come that time. We'll see what with Antoine Jimerson, Jeffrey Wilson can do. I think everybody was big on Jeffrey Wilson last season. I'm pretty okay with our running back situation. Antoine Jimerson, he played really well, like, to close out the season again, which he always has a good stretch of the season where he plays really well. He cuts out his fumbling. This, that, and the other. I think what we need to see from him is him come out the gate like that. He's always started a little slow, fumbling a little bit, not dancing around too much, and not making one cut and going. You know, he's great because he can make those cuts and dance around people. But we need him to do that 5 yards down the field and not 5 yards in the backfield.
Right. Yeah. You know, we lost Reggie Pegram, so. Yeah. Out of our backs, who we have now, who becomes the power guy? because it's not Willie Ivory, it's not Jimerson, and it's not Jeffrey Wilson.
Yeah, I don't know. You look at you know, Wilson, 222 pounds. You think you know he can kind of hit somebody, Antoine Jimerson, but he's only 5'9". I mean, you know, he's hard to take down sometimes, but he's not right. Reggie Pegel.
Yeah, but you don't think of Jimerson as a guy that's going to hit it up in there between the tackles. He's looking to get to the outside and make people miss. Yeah. Jeffrey Wilson runs hard. He runs hard between the tackles, but then he's got the slender frame, and you worry about the wear and tear on him. So, and then, you know, Rex Rollins, he's a straight line speed guy, and he's had the shoulder issues. So is this kind of signaling that our offense is going to be a little bit more spread out? Or, you know, what's the deal?
Well, you know, I wouldn't mind if we spread it out a little bit and then still get the tough yards that way. I mean, do it Oregon style. Oregon does the straight ahead. They pretty much just run the ball all the time. They're a power run team, but they're power plus finesse. You know, they spread you out and then just go nonstop and make you the toughness comes from having to play 15 plays in you know, like 30 seconds, whatever it is.
You know what would be intriguing to me is what the short yardage situations is if you brought in a guy like Caleb Chumley and you almost went like a Tim Tebow package for Chumley. I mean, he's 6'5", 220. The dude should be able to get 2 yards when we need 2 yards. He's athletic enough. He's played quarterback. Let's just, you know, bring back the Wild Eagle, but let's just go straight ahead with him. I don't know. It's just something different.
You know, I think in our offense, Mike Kanell has to show that he doesn't mind running with the quarterback no matter what. I think Josh Greer even, you know, put his head down and ran. yeah. Everybody's done it. I mean, obviously if Dejan's out there, we like his speed, you know, and so that kind of gives the offense some dynamism that it wouldn't happen otherwise. I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question. I think what we'll probably be doing is giving it to Jimerson and let him see what he can do going straight ahead. And if I mean, it's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be Jerome Bettis out there, but if he can get 1 or 2 yards every time, that's it. Because the idea is that, you know, we're not going to need 8 yards running in up the middle. You know what I'm saying? So you can get 1 or 2 yards and get 1 or 2 yards. And that's the thing. Hey, Antoine Jimerson, can you put your foot down and get 2 yards and don't dance around looking for the home run? Pick your spots. Yeah.
So since we're getting close to draft season again, and we know that pretty much nobody from UNT is going to get drafted again this year. Well, there'll be some free agent signings, but nobody's going to get drafted. Is there anybody off of next year's team that you can say or that you think has a chance of, if they have a good year, could be drafted?
Somebody on our team has a good year, they could be drafted. I don't know. I think Carlos Harris is too small to do that. I don't know. I don't think there's anybody. There's a lot of size that's involved in this thing. I kind of like what you're talking about, Jamal Marshall out there. I think he has a size, 6'2", 203 pounds. And if he has a great year, then maybe that happens. But everybody else kind of has a size problem that they'll get overlooked. Kind of like, you know, I mean, our running back there, I can't even think of his name right now. Plays for the Cowboys now? God.
Dunbar. Lance Dunbar.
Lance Dunbar. Goodness. Lance Dunbar. He was definitely draftable. He had speed. He had, you know, proven ability out in the field. And, you know, they were like, well, he's kind of smallish. So, there you go. I think you need size plus, you know, performance. And I think the only guy is maybe Jamal Marshall out there. What do you think?
I think the one hidden gem on the roster, and if he continues to play well and progress, is Marcus Smith, the tight end. I think his speed and his size, that if he continues to improve his hands, that he might be the one guy that teams, because they're always looking for a big guy on the edge that can be a mismatch, and he could be one of those guys. So if he has a good year, I could see him being definitely the guy that gets drafted.
Yeah, he's what, 6'4", 250, thereabouts, something like that.
Yeah, he's obviously, he can move. He played wide receiver in high school. We saw he had a good relationship with McNulty. He caught the 6 touchdown passes last year, so he's good in the red zone. So it'd be interesting to watch his progression this year.
Yeah, we kind of like tossing it up to him and seeing what he could do with it, basically. That was our offense for a couple of those plays. Like, throw it up to Marcus Smith, see what happens.
Yeah, because obviously we didn't do it with Darius Terrell, so...
Yeah, which is odd. I don't know. We had basically two guys that kind of do the same thing. We just, I don't know. Yeah, speaking of Darius Terrell, you saw he has a blog now. It's called, like, unpopularopinion.blogspot.com. It's him and his wife. They're blogging it out. So there you go. Check that out, everybody. I retweeted it. I mean, you know, as a voice on the internet, you know, I support fellow voices on the internet. He's mostly talking about the Cowboys right now, I think. No hot sports UNT opinions right now.
The Cowboys, you know, DeMarco Murray, let him walk. I don't, you know, there was an article that came out about Jerry Jones. He's not really running things anymore. It's his son, so.
Well, you know what? That's probably a good thing. He wasn't running things, and they finally got back to the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Let's keep up. Keep more of this. Don't let Jerry mess things up, you know? I like that plan of action.
Yeah, I know. Just think, they could have drafted Johnny Manziel, and, you know, he'd probably still be in rehab. He is. He's still in rehab. He's been in rehab for, like, 7 weeks now.
There's a lot of rehabbing to do, you know? All right, so that's, you know what? I have no problem with the Cowboys letting DeMarco Murray walk. This was, like, the first year that he's ever been injury-free. Not only that, he's, like, 29, and they give him 392 carries. Like, all signs point to he's not going to be able to duplicate what he did last year, so.
Yeah. Speaking of the NFL, Craig Roberson got the second round tender placed on him by the Browns, so lets you guys know that, you know, the Browns obviously think highly of him. So
yeah, he's out there waving the North Texas flag. He'll be watching the game. Zach Orr, what's up with him? He was on the special teams, the Ravens special teams for a while, and
he's still there.
All right, good. I don't think he's in danger of getting replaced, but, you know, there's always a new crop of young, cheap linebackers that come through after the draft, so he's got to earn his spot all over again.
Yeah, he's in a good organization, though. Baltimore is a great place to be.
Yeah. So there's that. Obviously, Lance Dunbar has another chance to show his stuff. I mean, he just has to out-duel Arkansas's own McFadden, right? Did they get him? Did they actually go through with that?
Yeah. They signed McFadden. They still have Randall, but he had the legal issues. You know, one team that I wouldn't be surprised to see offer the Cowboys a trade for Dunbar would be the Patriots.
Yeah.
They struggled. They tried to. They didn't re-sign Vereen, and they didn't get Reggie Bush, and they're looking for a pass-catching running back. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Patriots offered the Cowboys something for Dunbar.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of, I don't know if I could root for a Patriot, but I guess I'd have to make the exception if it's going to be Lance Dunbar. Lance, speaking of other, like, former UNTers in the pros, what's his name playing basketball down in Puerto Rico? Tony Mitchell?
Yeah.
So hopefully, I really hope he can get back to the league. Hopefully he gets in a good organization. I don't think the Pistons were one of those organizations. And they thought he was surplus to requirements there. But I don't know. Hopefully he's able to turn things around down there in Puerto Rico, ball out, maybe get another shot at the league. That'd be great.
Yeah, if I miss him. I miss his dunking ability. Miss the blocks. I miss the 30 and 20 games and like 5 block shots. I miss that.
Yeah, it was like so cheating is what he was doing.
You know, speaking of Sun Belt basketball, do you like – they moved their champion – their championship game is actually on at noon today on Selection Sunday. Do you kind of wish that when we were playing in the Sun Belt, like, that we would have been playing on Selection Sunday?
Yeah, because I think everybody – you look at it and it's, you know, it's kind of the big day that everybody's paying attention. I don't know. It's whatever. I try not to think about the Sun Belt. It was fun that we dominated the Sun Belt, I mean, more or less, but then it sucked that it, you know, that it was a Sun Belt, and we got, like, no recognition ever.
No. And that brings me to another thing is, did you see that UAB, they won the conference championship for Conference USA in basketball?
No,
they
were able to beat. Paying attention to it, but yeah.
Yeah. So UAB, which the conference tournament was in Birmingham, they were the team, they knocked off Louisiana Tech, and they knocked off they knocked off Louisiana Tech, and then they beat Middle Tennessee to win the Conference USA championship, which I don't think it's a good thing for Conference USA. I think that they're going to probably get like a 15 seed or a 16 seed. They were 18 and 15 on the year, And it really, I don't, they're not going to make much noise in the tournament. Whereas if Old Dominion, who really surprised me by losing to Middle Tennessee State, if they would have been able to get in the tournament, I would have been scared to play them because of how good their defense is. Or if Louisiana Tech would have been able to get in the tournament, they might have been able to win at least a game. But yeah. Now we have UAB, who, you know, is going to get blown out by Kentucky. Or, well, they're not going to play Kentucky. But yeah, they're going to play somebody really good, and they're not going to have a chance.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's bad.
That's the thing, is that you want to have a chance. You want, like, there to be a chance for the underdog to go out there and be a great story. But then you're like, ah, well, now it actually hurts the entire league because we don't have our best team out there playing. And it happened to Middle Tennessee when they played in the Sun Belt, too, right? They lost at the conference tournament, and so then, you know, they were probably the team that could go out there and do some things, and it was like Alabama, Birmingham, or, I mean, the other one, whatever they call it, Arkansas, Little Rock, they won.
Right.
Anyway, yeah. It was the same kind of deal.
Which, you know, I had brought it up on Go Mean Green, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if some conferences, just the mid-major and the smaller leagues, the leagues that are going to be one-bid leagues, if they went to a format where only the top four teams got into the conference tournament, you know, or
oh, that'd be great.
Somewhere where, you know, where they were, the conferences were assured that their best teams would get in the tournament so that they'd have a chance to see, you know, their representation would be better. You wouldn't see a 16 and 19 team go play somebody. You know, yeah, what I'm saying?
Or at the very least, give an auto bid to the league champion. Like, if you win the regular season, you get a bid. Or, I mean, at least it's something. Like, throw them in a playing game or something. You know what I mean? Like, give them something that they can hold on to. And, you know, like, you win your league, that should count for something, you know, for the, over the course of the regular season, you know, you dominated the competition, you won your conference, and then now you get bounced because you lost in the conference tournament. I think that's kind of harsh. But I don't know how you square that with the other teams. But I don't know, maybe, I mean, because it's kind of cool that if you win the conference tournament, you automatically go into the tournament, you know, but I don't know.
Right. You know, because I was watching this week earlier, Wofford was playing Furman. And Wofford, you know, they won 28 games. They're in the conference championship game. They're playing Furman, who they had like a bunch of young kids, but had gotten hot at the right time. And so they had made the run to the final. Well, Furman had only won 11 games on the year. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're that conference, the Southern Conference, God, you're hoping that, please, Wofford, please, just win. Just win and get in. And they almost lost. It was 67-64 was the final. But, geez, I mean, 11-22 team in the in the NCAA tournament, that's pitiful.
Yeah, I'm all for the small, you know, like the underdog getting in there. But I want the underdog, like the team that's, like you said, 28-win Wofford that doesn't have a whole lot of talent, but it's a good basketball team. That's the kind of underdog I want. I don't want a team that are just kind of coasting, you know, through the season, or just, you know, got hot at the right time, hit a couple threes, and now all of a sudden they're, you know, they're beating teams that are actually good basketball teams.
Unless it's North Texas, then that would, you know, if we would have ran the table, I would have been like, hey, that's cool, we're cool, we're gonna make noise.
Yeah. I wanted to, because I always talk, I always see this. I follow him on Instagram. Casey Obi, he plays for the Portland Arena League team. He's out there doing stuff. Former North Texas player. He's out there balling. He's making a nice little career for himself out in Portland, playing Arena League football. He goes both ways. You know, it's like Iron Man type style. And, you know, he scored some touchdowns and he's made some tackles, et cetera, et cetera. So you can make a career out there in things beyond the NFL and beyond the NBA, obviously. We got some guys playing in the lower leagues. So, yeah, check them out. Follow them. Follow their career. If you have a chance to go see Arena League football, you can see Casey Obi there. You know, go
very nice. You know, speaking of ex players, Brandon Bird, he makes his return to UNT. He's a graduate assistant for the football team on the defensive side of the ball. Kind of interesting.
Yeah,
but well, still, you know, it's good.
Randy Moss is out there coaching. He's a defensive coordinator for a high school. You know what I mean? He said he's always felt like he had a defensive mindset anyway. So, I mean, hey, who better to unlock this, to know what the defense can do than a guy that played against them, right? Had to study defense all the time. So there you go. Good stuff. I think we're going to wrap this up because I'm going to go to the gym and try to play some basketball. So that way I don't, you know, because I want to get away from doing what I did past couple of seasons where I was like, oh, the GoMeanGreen.com basketball game's coming up. Let me go to the gym, play basketball. So for like two months a year. So now I'm like, you know, let me go and keep this up, right? This momentum, this wave. So that's
very
that.
Nice.
Yeah. This will be up on the internet and you can listen to it and you can subscribe. Go to MeanGreenNation.com/subscribe and then you can find all the ways to do that. If you click on the right where it says Mean Green Nation Podcast, there you can subscribe there. Greg, on Twitter, you are?
MGN_breakdown.
And I am Mean Green Nation on the Twitter. If you have some hot sports opinions about what we talked about today or things that you want us to talk about, tweet at us or email us, email at meangreennation.com. You leave a comment. There's lots of ways for you to get in touch with us. So do so and let us know what you think. All feedback is appreciated. And I think we're done.